ॐ भरताय प्रतिपूजितां देवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसंसृतामि भगवद्गीते भगवद्वैषिणी. Yo yo yam yam tanu bhaktaha. Yo yo yam yam tanu bhaktaha. Shrita yarachitum icchati. Shrita yarachitum icchati. Tasya tasya chalam shtadham. Tasya tasya chalam shtadham. Tameva vidtatam yaham. Tameva vidtatam yaham. Yaha yaha. Yam yam tanum bhaktaha shraddhaya architum icchati tasya tasya achalam shraddham tam eva vidhatami aham vidhatami aham. Famous verse. Yaha yaha bhaktaha. Bhaktaha means the devotee. Yaha yaha means whichever devotee, whichever devotee, shraddhaya, with shraddha, desires to worship. Yam archita means to worship. Ichati wants to, desires to. So whatever devotee desires to worship yam yam tanum, whatever form. Okay? So tanum, Krishna speaking, whatever tanum means body or form. So my body. So whichever form, he's saying. So whoever the devotee may be, and in whatever form he wants to worship, he worships with shraddha. So shraddhaya, with shraddha, architum to worship. Ichati, he desires. Tasya tasya, for him, for that devotee, achalam shraddham, tam, that tam means that tam eva, that very shraddha, achalam, vidadami aham. I make that very shraddha, achalam, firm, strong. So here, just to make sure that the verse is clear. There are many devatas, right? And there are in the Vedic, the Karmakanda, the first portion of the Vedas, there are many rituals that can be done to evoke many different revolts. And there are many different devatas that can be worshipped and also have pujas and Vedic rituals done to in order to evoke those results. And so here Krishna is saying, and he says in the next verse too to complete it, in whatever form a bhakta, a devotee, worships me, evokes me, with shraddha, as long as shraddha, in whatever form they worship me, as long as if they worship me with that shraddha. Shraddha means there's a commitment there, there's an acceptance of that devata as being Bhagavan, as being the Lord. Right? So you're invoking the Lord in that form, you have shraddha in that. So in whatever form the devotee, the bhakta, evokes me with shraddha, worships me with shraddha, I make that shraddha very achala. Achala means wavering, that which wavers. Achala means unwavering. So I make that shraddha very firm for him. Aham vidyadami means I make. Achalan vidyadami, I make very strong. I make that shraddha unwavering for him. So what that means is I support, in whatever form the devotee worships me, I support him or her in invoking me in that form. And I will make his shraddha or her shraddha strong. So we'll do it with the next verse also, because how is he going to make it strong? What does that mean? So he says, Saha Satya Shataya Yusaha Satya Shataya Yusaha Tasya Ratanam Iyate Tasya Ratanam Iyate Labate Chatatak Kaman Labate Chatatak Kaman Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan. He says, Saha Taya Shraddhaya Yuktaha Tasyaha Radhanam Iyate. If you're reading off of Swamiji's book, it might say Tasya Radhanam. Does it say Tasya Radhanam as one word?
Yes.
Okay. Our Shankara takes that, he breaks it differently as Tasya Radhanam. So you're going to see it in some books, you'll see it as Tasya, which would become Tasyaha Radhanam. In other books, you'll see Tasya Aradhanam. Tasyaha Radhanam is better. So it's better to have a break there and take that as a typo. Tasyaha Radhanam. So you see Tasya, break, Radhanam, Iyate. Lapatecha, Tataha Kaman. Maya eva vihitan hitan. So here he says, Saha yuktaha taya shuddha ashuddhaya. For that one, who is endowed, who is endowed with the shraddha, with that shraddha, the bhakta, in fact bhakta, who's yuktaha united with the shraddha, taya shuddhaya. So Saha yuttaha, saha bhaktaha yuttaha, the one who has that shraddha. Tasyaha rajanam iyate. Rajanam, Arajanam is worship. He does the worship of that devata, right? The one who has the shraddha, he does the, with the worship, he worships that devata. So the one who does that, labhate cha tataha, and he labhate, and he gains, and he obtains, kaman, tan kaman, And he attains the desires, and he attains those desires for which he's doing the worship, for which he's doing the ritual. He gains those desires, the things that he desires, from that ritual, from that worship, which has been ordained by me, because it has been ordained by me. Niya eva vihitan. He there means because. So here what he's saying, let me just recap the whole thing. Whatever form a bhakta worships me with devotion, with shraddha, whatever form he evokes me, for him I strengthen that shraddha. Right? Shraddha means the faith, the belief. So he believes in me in this particular form. That shraddha that he has, I will strengthen, Krishna says. Then he says, how? He says, that person who's endowed, who has the shraddha, He worships the given devata, and he gains the desired objects from that devata, from that worship. He gets what he wants from that ritual. He gains it, right? Because that has been ordained by me. Okay, so now, let me just explain it in terms of the Vedic culture. The first part of the Veda, there are many rituals which are called what we call kamya karmas. In other words, there's many rituals that I can do in order to attain a desired result. Like there are rituals that I can do to bring the rains. There are rituals I can do to have a child. There's rituals I can do for health. There's rituals I can do, and certain rituals that I can do to ward off snake bites. Okay? There's all kinds of rituals that are contained in the Vedas, and if they are done properly, those rituals, if you do the ritual properly and with Shraddha, those rituals will give the result that they say that they will give. Okay? Why will they give the result that they say they will give? But here Krishna is saying it's because those rituals, the karma, the ritual, and the karma phala are ordained by me. Right? And so this is really, he's talking within the realm of the karmakanda, and when you're evoking a given, when you're doing a given ritual, you'll be evoking a different devata also. Right? Like when you do these rituals, we're offering ghee into the fire, and offering different, making different, harvest different offerings into the fire, Agni will take the offering up to a given devata who's being evoked by that ritual. And now Krishna is saying, and that ritual works. If the ritual didn't work, then how could I strengthen the Shraddha? I strengthened that devotee's Shraddha because these rituals actually bear fruit, right? Why do they bear fruit? It's because the whole, you have to understand that the whole Veda is viewed as revealed knowledge. And so the rituals themselves are viewed as revealed knowledge. They're rituals that you do this and this action in order to gain this given result. And those different rituals are not something that you yourself can understand. Like, why would I say these particular chants and throw these offerings into the fire? You know, and then get to have a child, have a son, you know, or have a daughter. Why would that happen? Why should I be able to do these rituals in these particular ways, evoking these deities, and then the rains come? Why is that? You know, it's not something that you can figure out on your own. That's why the Vedas are considered revealed knowledge. And so here Krishna is saying, all of these rituals and evoking these different deities, as he'll go on to say later, which are really just forms of myself, you know, I accept that devotion for the, if we have to go back now, for the arti, the one who's worshipping me so that I can, if I'm an arti, then I'm worshipping the Lord so that I can increase my wealth or increase my pleasure or gain the things that I want to gain in the society. Increase my wealth, increase my power, increase my progeny, increase my security. Whatever those desires are, if I'm an arti, I'll pray to the Lord to bless me with that. Or I'll do rituals, you know, evoking a given deity to help me gain those karma phalas, those results of action. Also, if I'm you know, an artha, one who's in distress, and I'm praying to the Lord, doing rituals to the Lord in order to have the Lord help me in that situation. Remember, so they've got the artha, you've got the arti, then you've got the jignasu and the jnani. These four types of bhaktis. These two verses here are referring to the artha and the arti, the ones who is either evoking Bhagawan because of distress, you know, or evoking Bhagawan because I want to improve my situation. So in that case, I'm looking for a karma phala. You know, I'm looking for Bhagawan to make things better for me in the world. When that's the case, I'm usually evoking Ishvara in the form of a given deity, the deity who will help me the most You know, like Ganesh is for removing obstacles, Saraswati is for giving me skills in music or skills in dance or skills in study. But there's so many different deities, and all of these deities are associated with given rituals. Why? Because they can help me, really, that aspect of Ishwara that can help me the most in achieving what I want to achieve. And so here, even though all of the deities are nothing but aspects of me, as Krishna will be saying, these are just aspects of me as Ishwara, you know, I support their aspects of me, I support their worship, right? I support those rituals, and I support them in their shraddha toward me in that particular ritual that they're doing. So how do I support it? I support it by making sure that the ritual works, right? That those given rituals, that those karmas actually give results. There's another way that this is taken also in the third line. It says you can take it like this. Instead of they obtain that person, that devotee, you know, who does these rituals with shraddha, they gain these desires from that ritual that they do, or from that given devata, as ordained by me. And then instead of having hitan, it's hitan. They gain those karmas, those desired objects, which are hita. Hita in this case means those which are dharmic, those which are good for them. Those karmas that are good for them, that are hitam, that are beneficial, they gain those ordained by me. But the first reading is, instead of hitan, it's hitan. It's one of these things where you don't know where to break the sandhi, right? If you break the sandhi one way, it has this meaning. If you break the sandhi another way, it has another meaning. So here, Shankar's first reading is taking it as hitan, hitan, two words. And then what it means is simply, they gain those objects of desires from that, right, from that deity. But those objects of desires that they gain, why do they gain them? Because it's been ordained by me. It's just a way of saying that this whole creation and the whole karma follow, whether it be Vedic or just secular, whether they be Vedic karmas, Vedic rituals that give results, or regular karmas in the world, any action gets a result. Those actions are ordained by me. The karma phala themselves are ordained by me. And so here they worship me in the form of the deity, and I support that worship. But actually both the devata and the karma phala and the karma are all part of my creation, are all part of myself. So that's basically what he's saying there. So let's go on. I'll pick all of this up as I start talking more about it. Antavatu palante sham. Antavatu palante sham. Ted bhavat jilpamedasam. Ted bhavat jilpamedasam. Devan devayajo yanti. Devan devayajo yanti. Madhbhaktayanti mamapi. Madhbhaktayanti mamapi. Antavattu palam tesham tet bhavati alpamedasam. Devan devayajaha yanti. Madhbhaktaha yanti mamapi. He says, but the phala, the result for these devotees that are worshipping a deva, the phala that they gain is antava, it's possessed of an end, right? They do a karma, the karma gives a result, that result, that phala is antava, it has an end, it's a finite result. He says, so for those devatas, tesham devatam, for those bhaktas, who are Ulpame Dasam, who have limited intelligence, but really it's limited understanding. Ulpa means small. Medha means clarity. Limited viveka. They're bhaktas, so they're not total avivekis. They're bhaktas. They have a relationship with Ishwara. But their understanding, their viveka, is limited. So for those who have this limited viveka, for them, the result that they're seeking, that result is antivat. It's possessed of an end. It's finite. It's a finite result. He says, the devan devayajaha yanti. Those who are worshipping the devas, the Lord in all these different forms, they go to the devas. I'll have to explain that in a moment. Devan devayajaha yanti. Those who worship the devas, they go to the devas. Madbhaktaha, but my bhaktas, yanti mam, they go to me. This next verse, and I'll do them together. Avyaktam yaktimapanyam Avyaktam yaktimapanyam Manyante mama buddhiyaha Manyante mama buddhiyaha Parampavam majanantaha Parampavam majanantaha Mamavyayam anuttamam Mamavyayam anuttamam Avyaktam vyaktim apanyam manyante mam abuddhiyaha param bhavam ajanantaha mama avyayam anittamam. He says, these abuddhiyaha means these who have limited viveka. Buddhi means intelligence, intellect, or just viveka. You're not going to say they don't have a mind. Abuddhiyaha means limited, right? So they have limited viveka. So those who, these devotees who have limited viveka, they take me, manyante mam, they consider me, they take me, who am by nature, avyaktam. Avyaktam means not a form. My being is not a form to be differentiated from other forms in the world. I am avyaktam. I am not an object to be seen in the creation. Avyaktam. Aprakasham means I'm not something that appears as an object. They take me to be one who has attained a form. They take me now as Shankara says. They take me now to have taken on a form because it's Krishna. Sorry, Krishna is viewed as Ishwara. So now Ishwara is in a form. This is Ishwara. So there's Krishna saying they're taking me now as Ishwara, me in this form, right? Not understanding. They're taking me to be Ishwara, this form to be Ishwara, not understanding my nature as avyaktam, right? That which is param bhava, my nature which is free from time, free from space, which is avyayam, which is free from change, which is anuttamam, that which is supreme, that which has nothing greater than itself. So ajanantaha, not knowing that supreme form of mind, which is limitless and changeless, and avyaktam itself, which is not manifest in the nature of a form. Not knowing my true nature, they take me now to be in this form. Me, Ishwara, to have now be in this form. So they're worshipping me in that way, not knowing my true nature. So. Naham prakasha sarvasya. Naham prakasha sarvasya. Yoga maya samavritaha. Yoga maya samavritaha. Mudoyam napajanati. Mudoyam napajanati. Loko mam ajamavyayam. Loko mam ajamavyayam. Na aham prakashaha sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha mudaha ayam na abhijanati lokaha mam ajam avyayam. Na aham prakashaha sarvasya, for everyone, means everybody unless they know, everybody except the jnani, so for all, I am not prakashaha. Means I am not known. Prakashaha means I'm not lit up. You know, like this now, because there's light, this is prakashaha, this is lit up. But I am not, Bhagavan is saying, I'm not prakashaha. As I am, I'm not known. So he says, na aham prakashaha, I'm not manifest, I'm not known. For all of the people. Why? Because I, yoga maya samavritaha, I'm covered by my own yoga maya. Yoga maya is the movement of the three gunas. This whole thing is my yoga maya. This whole projection of the Satra, Rajas, and Tamas in all of its motion covers me. It hides me, he says. So I, covered by my own maya, by my yoga maya, I am na prakashaha. I am not seen by all of these people. Mudaha ayam lokaha, all of these, that the person, this whole world, the yam lokaha, is deluded, being deluded, na abhijanati, they don't know me as ajam avyayam. They don't know the me that is ajam, birthless and changeless. Right? Deluded by my maya, I am not seen by them. I am as though covered over by this maya, by my maya. And being covered over, the whole world is deluded. Every person is deluded by this, and they don't, and so they don't know me, who am free from birth and free from change. Ajam means free from birth. Abhiyam means I don't vary, I don't deviate. So it's birth and death. I'm free from birth. I'm free from change. As I'm Param Brahman, as myself is the Atma, as the Param Brahman is Satchidananda, that being, that myself, the one from whom this whole creation comes and resolves. That means they don't know. And so here, for all of the bhaktas, for all of us, very many different types of bhaktas, but very few of the bhaktas know me or seek me. The jignyasu doesn't know me, but the jignyasu seeks me. As I am, seeks to know the one from whom, the jignyasu, the one who wants to gain self-knowledge. That jignyasu wants to know who I am in truth. What is my true nature? There, for the jignyasu, the attachment is toward me, right? To know me. I'm the one that the jignyasu is seeking. Whereas for the artha and the arati, they're not seeking me. They're seeking an object in the world and are seeking my help to get that object. So they're seeking an object. Only the jignyasu is seeking me, to know me as I am. I'm the object of their desire. For the jnani, I am the object of the jnani's desire. That desire, of course, resolves into myself as being their very self. But the jignyasu and the jnani, I am the object of their desire. I am the one that they have devotion to. I am the one that they want to know. They want to know me, Ishwara. You know? Ones who have less viveka, you know, because they're still bhaktas, but they have less viveka, they worship me in many different forms. They worship me in many different forms in order to fulfill their desires. And I will support their worship of me in those, in all of those forms. And I will support all of the rituals that they do to invoke the different devatas in order to fulfill their desire. I support that by actually fulfilling their desires. I support that Shraddha. And in fact, all of these different devatas are just aspects of me. And so I support their Shraddha, and I support the relationship, which, actually, if you think about it, it's a beautiful thing. It's like, I support, Bhagavan says, in whatever form you worship me, I will support you in that. Because you are worshiping me, you are seeking me, you know. And so I always take this particular verse as a very ecumenical verse. You know, it's a verse that allows, and it's so Hindu. And, you know, it's so very Hindu, because in India, this verse is one of the key verses that allows Hindus to accept any religion. Oh, you're worshipping Bhagavan in this form, you know. This is the way that you evoke the Lord. That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely valid for them. It's because of this verse. You know, this verse is to hold the key concept. And in whatever form, and the whole thing is Ishwara. You know, so you're either evoking Ishwara as the whole, you know, and then you're going after Ishwara himself, or you're evoking Ishwara in a form in order to help you in the form of one of the devatas. But Bhagavan says, whatever form you invoke me is still only me. And you're still evoking me. If you're invoking me in this form, it's still me that you're evoking. Okay? But you're imagining me in this particular form. And so I will support that. I will come to you in that form. I will fulfill your desires in that form. What difference does it make? You know? The problem is, and what Shankar says, here, if you take in this verse 22, if you take it as that, instead of hitan, he says, if you take it as hitan is one word, it means, you know, Bhagavan says, I will let you obtain those desires that you are seeking, as long as they're hita, as long as they're good for you. And Shankara says, no desire is really good for you. you have to take that relatively. That no desire is really good for you. It's just causes pain in the end. But anyway, if it's dharmic, does it cause any real problem? Then you get to take it like that, because in the end, no desire is really going to be helpful for you. I mean, the only desire that's helpful for you is the desire that resolves this problem of seeking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, any desire that you fulfill, even if it's through a performance of a ritual or seeking your devotion to a different devata, which can actually end up in taking you to the loka of that devata. You can end up going to the loka of that devata. Even that, all of that is time bound. Anything that takes you to a loka, no matter how much ananda that particular loka can give you, or how blessed is that relationship with that particular devata, it's still subject to time, still subject to change, and therefore still subject to dukkha. So there's still no escape. You're still within the world of samsara. And so, because of that, because you're a devata, all right, but that's what you're seeking, you're not mature in your viveka. Because you're not mature in your viveka. We're all not mature in our viveka. In this way or that way or this way, that's all part of the sadhana, is in fact to become mature in that viveka. Because so many times we catch ourselves thinking, well, if only I could have that, then I would be happy, or I need this in order to be happy, or let me have... And it's very subtle, on all different types of subtle levels. We need this or that or the other thing to be happy, and we end up praying to Bhagavan, please let it be like this so that I can be happy. Please let me have this so that I can be happy. So that's all devata worship in a way. Or it's asking Bhagavan, you know, come and help me to have this. Or in fact, this doesn't have anything to do in the end with my ananda. And so that's the maturing process. In fact, to the degree that we ask for this, to that degree I'm stressed. It doesn't really matter what it is. I need to have this. It means I need, you can, like Swamiji will say, you know, you can pray for the well-being of others. You can pray for the well-being of yourself. You can pray all that you want. But to the degree that you need the creation to be a particular way in order for you to be happy and whole and complete. To that degree, you have stress. To that degree, you have dukkha. You know, and to that degree, you have fear. Like even to the slightest degree, you know, of dvaita, which is the slightest degree of dvaita, you will have fear. Right? Because there's a separation between you, subject and the object. There's a separation there. And so in the end, this as your mind and your being, the jiva-jiva, I mean, matures, you know, in the light of your knowledge, you find that more and more you become, you know, a vairagi. You become one who is really, whose shraddha and devotion and bhakti is toward Ishvara and not toward things.
Not towards what?
Things. It's toward Ishvara and not toward things. And it becomes your sadhana, becomes sadhana means always in terms of your understanding and your discipline around this. Discipline, the discipline of your understanding, not the discipline of doing, the discipline of bringing your understanding to your mind, to the behavior of your mind. You know, it becomes, you become more and more giving over the situation to Ishvara, appreciating the situation as Ishvara rather than becoming a jiva within Ishvara's situation. If I appreciate the situation as Ishvara, I can function in the situation, I can be objective in the situation, I can help in the situation, I can be engaged in the situation. But I'm not asking the situation to be other than what it is for my well-being. It's a subtle thing. It's a subtle thing because that doesn't mean that you sit like a bump on a log in a situation. As I do with the situation, I find myself doing what I'm called to do in the situation, which is to help, whatever that is. Whatever your dharma is in the situation, that's your duty, that's what you're called to do. And that is what you prefer to do. You prefer to do that because anything that veers from that is stressful, not just for you, but for everybody. It's stressful for everybody. And so the less that I find, what happens is, I think as a person matures more, less and less and less, you're going out to achieve your happiness, you know? And more and more and more, you're going toward appreciation of Ishvara. So that's what this is about. More and more, the mind is resting in the avyakta, in the truth of Ishvara, which is yourself. It's a resting in that identity. The conscious being that you are is Ishvara, and this whole creation is a manifestation of that. And so your mind resting in the wholeness of yourself, you then live your life in this creation as long as you have a body, mind, sense, organ. What I have to be careful of when I'm all kind of worried when I'm talking in this way, because it's not at all about not being engaged or not being, it's not about not being engaged, not being related, not fully living your life. It's totally about being engaged, being related, and fully living your life, which is the life that you have right here, right now. That's the tricky thing. You know, it's like that little cartoon with two monks sitting right next to each other, and the one monk, what does he say? He says,
"This is it. There is no more."
Yeah, he goes,
the old guy says to the young guy,
"This is it. There's no more. This is it." It's really cute. I'm gonna put that online for my class. This is it. You know, it's a wonderful phrase. I mean, this is it. You know, this is the life to be engaged in. The life that's happening right now. This is the life to do well. You know, this is the life to to revel in, not some other life, or not waiting until things change to make it better. You know, because we're always going to, that's the problem, we're always going to be waiting for something to change. So it's being able to be totally engaged in this life, and it's usually, that's exactly what we can't do. Okay? We can't be totally committed and engaged to the life we have, because we'll be thinking about, well, you know, I'm trying to make it better. Trying to make it better in one way or another way, or this way or that way, rather than being satisfied, you know, with the life that you have, moment to moment to moment to moment. So it's Swamiji, you know, because I can get out of that space sometimes, and Swamiji doesn't get out of that space. He just doesn't. He lives in that space. I think I told you this in class, whoever was here, you know, I was talking to him recently, very recently. I think I was actually with him at that last time I was with him, and I said something like, well, Swamiji, what are your plans? What are your plans? What's Swamiji going to do? Going to be doing? He just said, I don't have any plans. I don't have any plans. Because I was talking about my plans, so I said, you know, what are your plans? So I don't have any plans. And I said, I know. I know. But still, what are your plans? And he said, I don't know. I don't have any plans. We'll just see. You know, we'll see what happens. Yeah. But you know what? He has plans at the moment that it's time to have a plan. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes there's a time when the plan is necessary. So at that time you have a plan, but at the time, if that's not the time to have the plan isn't there. You don't always have a plan. You know what I mean? Sometimes there's a plan. Sometimes there's no plan. There only is what is there at the moment, and that's what you're engaged in, completely engaged in, and that's what he does. You know, and I find, I'm sure for all of us, as you, and I find for myself, more and more that that's what I do too. Mm-hmm. Not to the degree that he is, but more and more that's what I do. This is what I'm doing, and I do it the best that I can, and then we'll see tomorrow. I don't know. And that's actually the truth. Do you know? Do you really know? No. You don't really know. But you know today, you know, and you do the best that you can today. And to the degree that you can do that, you're alive to your life. A lot of times we're only alive to our worried mind. You know, we're lost in our worried mind. And we're missing. So it's almost like we're lost inside the capsule of the jiva. You know, we're lost inside the jiva's mind of the manas, the jiva's mind of worry. We're lost in that because that's where we're living. And so as time goes on, say in light of this knowledge, that jiva mind, you know what I mean by that? It's like all of the worries and all of the concerns and all of the turmoil. You know, that's where we're that's what we're alive to. And there comes a time when that's not there. And those are not my concerns. I'm here. I'm living here. And what is this? Is Ishwara. Okay? It's not that the jiva's turmoil isn't part of Ishwara. It is. Mm-hmm. But it's the jiva's turmoil within Ishwara. What about when the jiva's turmoil is settled, as it settles down, right? Then the jiva's turmoil, which is existing as part and parcel of Ishwara also, is not there muddying the waters in a sense. As you're not contained in that, you're able to actually live out the prarabdha that is your life. It's subtle. I mean, for me, it's very subtle. It's something that I go on realizing. Layer after layer, you know, from this aspect to this aspect, and you know, from this perspective to that perspective, you know, deeper and deeper, more interconnected levels. And it's really just a process of vairagya. I see it as a process of vairagya. Vairagya and knowledge are, in a sense, the same. Vairagya and knowledge are one and the same. As your knowledge matures, your vairagya matures. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as your knowledge matures, the buddhi is not asking Ananda to be elsewhere, not asking for anything other than the Ishwar. What you seek, you are the Ananda that you seek, right? You are the Ananda that you seek, and at some point, as you go along, your mind continues to own that fact up more and more and more and more. If it owns up that fact, then your mind isn't, if you are the if it's owning up the fact that you are the Ananda that you seek, then you're not asking Ishwar to provide the Ananda for you. Right? Because normally we're asking Ishwar to provide the Ananda for us. If you're a bhakta, you're asking Ishwar, please give me the Ananda in this form, or give me the Ananda in this form, or let me do this ritual so that I can attain this, so that I can have Ananda in this form.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making the decision about where my Ananda is. I'm still, you know, searching out here for it and asking Ishwar to help me. And Bhagavan says, well, if you have this relationship with me, and there's all kinds of karma and karma phala, I'll support that. You know, if you want, if this is what you want, this is how to get it. You know, I'll support your shuddha, and because this is what you want. But as you mature, what happens is that the ananda, that the viveka between the ananda and the objects, the viveka takes place. It's no longer that this object and my ananda are united as one thing, or even that this creation and my ananda are united as one thing. I want, if it's the whole creation, you can see the whole creation, this manifest knowledge, as a manifestation of ananda. That's Ishwara. The entire creation is a manifestation of ananda. But from the jiva's perspective, you know, from the perspective of an ajnani, I look for little glimpses of ananda here and there. It's always in reference to my desire. But for jnani, that isn't what it is. I'm not looking out here for little glimpses of ananda. The mind has recognized the source of ananda, and then I can see this whole creation of Ishwar, a manifestation of ananda. I can sit with myself as ananda. And that's for jnani, that's for the mature mind revels in that reality, not asking it to be different. You don't ask it to be different. Why? Because you found the source of the ananda. If you haven't found the source of the ananda, then you are asking it to be different. Because you need to be ananda, because you are ananda. There's a gap, there's a ignorance between the who you are and what you're seeking. Right? Mm-hmm. There's an ajnanam there. And so that mind is uncomfortable. Because there's the mind feels lost, looking for itself in the creation. But the mind that has knowledge is no longer looking for itself in the creation. It's not looking for ananda in the creation. It's found itself. And so then, the whole relationship that you have with the creation is different. For the jnani, so here in these verses, the Ishwara is saying, the jnani revels in me. The jnani is the one who's found me. And revels in me as my very self. The jnani said, I revel in Ishwara as my very self. I am the whole.
Mm-hmm.
That's the jnani's reality. It takes time for the mind to actually work through, you know, all of the samskaras and all of the desires and all of the tendencies to where that's just an abiding reality. Otherwise, my knowledge comes and it's always bringing my mind back to the recognition of the truth of that, you know? And as that mind goes on, absorbed in this knowledge, it matures. And the kind of immature in me, that behavior that goes against who I am and what I know, keeps dropping off. That's maturing. You know, the immaturity drops off, and I just remain the same. Not cluttered with my being, is cluttered with that type of behavior that goes against my knowledge, is slowly dropping off. So that's the process. So he says, for those who don't know me that way, then I'm covered. I'm as though covered. Where's covering? What is covering? What causes that covering? It's the whole yoga maya. It's this whole creation. This whole manifestation of duality is a huge covering. You yourself, your body, mind, sense organs are part of that yoga maya. It's an absolute 100% covering because everything about the upadhi is part of that yoga maya.
Mm.
You know? And looking out, engaged in this world, and just experiencing little glimpses of me, of the self, when the mind becomes quiet through the fulfillment of the desire. You know? And so then I run after more and more. I run after those moments of bliss that are being manifest by fulfillment of desire. And then I ask Ishwar to help me fulfill my desires so I can have more moments of that bliss. And so then I do all of these rituals and invoke Bhagavan in many different forms so that I can have these moments of fulfilled desire, because those are the little moments of bliss. At some point, I realize that those moments of bliss are just that, moments. And that they're really dukkha-yoni. They're little wounds of dukkha, because the little moments of bliss always go away. It makes me a little mukshu, and that's what makes a person, you know, eventually seek Bhagavan himself. And no longer seeking, you know, the fulfillment of desires, because you realize the finite nature of them. So that type of seeking stops at first, kind of like a dark night of the soul. It stops because it doesn't work and you don't know what does work.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end it stops because you know what does work, and you know what does work, and you abide there, and you know that that doesn't work, and so you have lost interest in it. Even when it's pulling at you, there comes a time when still may be pulling at you. The lack of vairagya can be pulling at you, but it's more like a mosquito or something that you don't want to engage with, you know, because it's pulling you out into dukkha. You don't want to go in that direction. So it doesn't have a hold on you anymore, even though it's pulling. Because you know the difference between staying home with yourself and getting pulled out. So that's more or less talking about. Take a moment.
Purnamidachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.